Hey folks, Scott Weingart here, and this is an MCRT Wii. This is the clinical stuff I promised. I'm a little bit late, but hopefully you'll forgive me. Today I want to talk about a situation that may seem simple, and yet if you don't treat it with respect, it could easily lead to disaster. And the problem would usually start with a phone call or a page saying, could you come over to ICU bed 7 because the patient has a cuff leak? And you would arrive at the bed, and indeed, the balloon of the endotracheal tube just was not inflated. And there was no obvious problem in the tubing or the pilot balloon itself. And so you'd put a little bit more air in, and maybe it would stay inflated for a little while, but then it would go back to flat again, or it wouldn't even inflate in the first place. And now, you might be thinking there is a rip in the cuff, and that is possible sometimes. But the more likely scenario is much more dangerous. Usually, what this will turn out to be is that the endotracheal tube has migrated above the patient's cords. And usually, it's sitting right at the glottic opening, though it could really be anywhere in the airway. Obviously, the first thing you do when you get in the room is you look up at the waveform end-tidal CO2. Anytime you have any issue with a patient who's endotracheally intubated or trach, the first thing you should do is look up at the waveform end-tidal CO2. You of course, do have waveform end-tidal CO2 on every patient being ventilated from the moment of intubation to the moment of extubation, right? Right? Because, like, after NAP4, you wouldn't have a hospital that's not having continuous end-tidal CO2 monitoring throughout the patient's entire mechanical ventilation course, right? That's a given. So I don't have to belabor that point. So you look up on these patients and the end tidal looks okay. And that can be false reassurance. Be very wary of assuming everything's fine just because there's end tidal. Because the situation, you have to imagine it. This is not always what it's going to be, but this is what you fear. Imagine a hugely inflated endotracheal tube cuff, because normally it has like 7 cc's of air in there. Imagine one with like 50 cc's of air. All right, like huge cuff, and you know that distal to the cuff is a little bit of extra endotracheal tube. Like, take a look at an ET tube if you're not sure what I'm talking about. And so imagine just that part distal to the cuff is what's sitting through the glottis, and then you have this big, whopping cuff balloon sitting over the glottis, being pushed in towards the glottis by the curve now in the endotracheal tube and the secured portion of it up on the patient's face. So you can see there's a little tension pushing that big balloon on the wrong side of the cords in and leaving that little bit of endotracheal tube. So with each breath, they'll definitely be end-tidal CO2 because it's still being delivered through the cords. And what you'll get is sometimes you get an air leak, especially if the patient's on high PEEP settings, because it can't retain that expiratory PEEP at all, because there's nothing to push against. It just pops that balloon a little bit out and lets that air right out. And as the peak pressures get higher during the breath, you get kind of a loss of that balloon glottis interface. So same thing. So you might look up at your vent and see that the inspiratory volumes and expiratory volumes don't match. Hence, the reason you're getting called by the nurses, because they think that it's a result of some form of leak. And they're right, but the leak is not a cuff leak usually. It's a leak because they no longer have a seated balloon in the patient's trachea. Okay. And of course, you listen to lung sounds, and that also could be falsely reassuring because you'll still hear bilateral lung sounds in this situation. So how do you address this? Well, you're kind of going to address it the same in any of the scenarios that's causing this kind of cuff leak setup. So let's say you did get there and the pilot balloon was screwed. Yeah, there's all sorts of ways you could jerry-rig this. And the only person I've ever heard speaking about this in conference form is a guy named Tom Mort, who is like one of the real mavens of ICU airway management. He gave a great lecture about this at SAM that I heard a few years back, but I haven't heard much about this since. And in the anesthesia literature, there's a whole bunch of stuff you could do to rescue temporarily a screwed-up pilot balloon. In my world, I just want a fixed ET tube tube in there. So I'm going to do the same in that circumstance. You get there, the pilot balloon's ruptured. Or maybe you actually have one of those situations where as the patient was being intubated, the ET tube cuff caught on a jagged tooth or on a piece of bridge work in the mouth, and now it really does have a rupture in the cuff itself. Or in the circumstance I was describing before where you actually have the ET tube cuff massively inflated up above the cords. I handle all of these the same way, which is I want to either change out the ET tube if the cuff is intact, or at least push the tube down in the circumstances where it's above the cords. But I'm going to handle them all pretty much the same way. And so the first thing you want to do is gather a whole bunch of equipment. You don't want to go into this half-assed and then realize you need stuff as you are already in the throes of changing out an ET tube. So I have a list on the blog site, and you could find it there, but I'm just going to read it off just in case you people are too lazy to go to the MCRT site. And I got to say, this is an aside, and I apologize because it's a bit tangential, but I notice like there's a blog reading audience for Josh's stuff and Rory's stuff. And then there's a podcast listener audience for my stuff. But the podcast listeners generally are not going to the site because I can kind of track the numbers on this stuff. And for each podcast, there's always large amounts of resources for each podcast. So if you are a podcast listener, make your way over to the blog and look at the actual show notes because I think you'll be rewarded by the stuff there. Okay, so what equipment to have? All right, you need a video device. And I don't care if it's standard geometry or hyperangulated, they'll both work. They're both fine for this purpose. And you just need one of them. And if you don't have VL, yeah, you probably could get it done with DL, but it's a lot more dangerous and it's not worth it. And somewhere in your hospital, there's a video laryngoscope, and either you or the service that has that device should be bringing that to the bedside for these ET tube exchanges. You need suction. You need a new same-sized empty endotracheal tube. You need additional endotracheal tubes, one additional one of the same size, and then one size smaller. You need a tube exchanger. You can get this done with a bougie, but it's a little more difficult due to the Coudé tip, and they're generally not marked for distance in a lot of versions, and they're a little stiffer and therefore more dangerous. So I like the airway exchange catheters. And the ones we use, I think the one most ICUs use is the Cook airway exchange catheter, and it's in the show notes. What sizes you can use, but it's a CAE-19 for 7 or larger ET tubes and a CA-15 for endotracheal tubes 5 to 6.5. If you could grab one, a Bronchport is nice. You need tons of lube. That was a Tom Mort tip that I took. You need a bougie or GlideScope stylet, depending on your VL choice. If your VL is standard geometry, then you want a bougie. And if your VL is a GlideScope or hyperangulated, you want a GlideScope stylet. Because this is what you're going to use to re-intubate if the airway exchange does not proceed as you like. On that same note, you need a supraglottic airway size for the patient and a scalpel, and the scalpel along with your other stuff will allow you to perform a scalpel finger bougie. You need an end-tidal CO2 with waveform, which should have already been at the bedside, but if for some reason your ICU, your ED doesn't have this, then whoever's doing the airway exchange wants a portable unit. And if you are, for instance, the anesthesia or airway team who responds to these out-of-OR airway calls, you better put an end-tidal CO2 with waveform into your bag and have that available if it's not there on every floor and in every ICU. You want to have one of these in your response bag. You need a BVM. And then this is optional, but it's really nice to have. You need a bronchoscope, potentially available. It doesn't necessarily need to be opened. We keep ours in the middle of our department, and it's there 20 feet away. I don't bother opening this on every single airway exchange, but I know it's there. And it's really nice if it could fit an Aintree catheter, which is an airway exchange catheter that fits over the bronch, and therefore you could ride the bronch down, see exactly where you are, and then advance the Aintree, pull the bronch out, and the Aintree catheter remains there. Okay, so now what's the actual procedure? And like I said, I'm going to do the same thing, whether it's a pilot cuff rupture, a cuff rupture, or an endotracheal tube that's migrated up above the cords. For me, it's really the same procedure. So you're going to get a friend. You need a friend. That friend could be a bedside nurse. The friend could be a medical student, a resident. It could be a colleague. It just needs to be someone who has even a modicum of understanding of how airway devices work. They don't need to know how to intubate. They don't need any advanced level of skill. They just need to be able to follow your directions as the laryngoscopist. And so you get that person there. And what you're going to do first is you're going to gently insert your VL device. Why gently? Because sometimes like 100 cc's has put into that ET tube cuff because people just keep coming to the bedside, seeing the vent is leaking. They'll put another 10 cc's in the cuff. It'll temporarily inflate and they'll go about their business. Then it'll alarm again. Oh, it must have slowly leaked out. They'll put another 10 cc's. And these balloons could get enormous before they rupture. So if you, you know, like a monster, put your laryngoscope in there, you could pop this cuff. This was also a tip from the Tom Moore lecture I had heard and had taken with me to heart ever since. So what you want to do is you want to gently creep that tip of your VL down the tongue with ever so much gentle finesse so that you could actually witness the cuff before you impale it with your device. So you're going to move down until you could find epiglottis, and then you may have already encountered an enormous cuff, or else you'll lift until you can see what's actually going on. Now, what you might see is a tube through the glottis, in which case it means the cuff itself is ruptured. Okay, we'll take care of that. Or you may see the cuff of the ET tube just above the glottis, in which case, again, we're going to have to take care of that. So what you're going to have your partner do now is put the bronch port on the ET tube. So now you have the ventilator still going, you have a bronch port there, and that allows you to actually gently advance with tons of lube the airway exchange catheter down the ET tube. Now, what you're going to want to do is look at the markings on the airway exchange catheter. And in general, through the ET tube, I'll look and probably go in 24, 25 centimeters till the lip. So I'll have the airway exchange catheter reading 24 or 25 at the patient's lips or teeth. Now, either you or your partner could be doing this. You're going to be holding the laryngoscope. You could get them to hold the ET tube for you, and then you could do the actual advancement of the airway exchange catheter because you might have more feel for it. And what you want to do is advance to like that 24, 25 mark or until you get hold up, because you might have hold up sooner, in which case don't jam it. That's how you get a alveolar rupture. Okay, so now you have an airway exchange catheter in here. Now, what happens next depends on whether you directly visualized everything, the cuff of the ET tube, the airway exchange catheter going through it, the cords, all of that. If you could swear on your life that that airway exchange catheter is through the cords by direct visualization, then you don't need this next step. But if you can't really see that great, you have kind of a limited view, you know where the ET tube is going generally, but you're not seeing the cords surrounding it, and you're just kind of hoping, then you want to put on the adapter that comes with these airway exchange catheters, and you actually want to give some breaths through the airway exchange catheter with that BVM, with the entitle on, and actually see waveform coming back. Because you can, and it seems surprising, but you actually can have the tip of the ET tube facing the glottis, giving you end-tidal CO2 through the ET tube, but then when you place the airway exchange catheter through, even though the tip is facing the cords, the airway exchange catheter could go into the esophagus. It could go through straight, or it could go through the Murphy's eye. And what's happening is, you know, the ET tube is kind of curved in its current configuration, and when you put the airway exchange catheter in, it straightens. And that straightening may be just enough to angle the tip of the tube such that the airway exchange catheter goes into the patient's esophagus. So unless you have a great visualization of it, you should confirm that it's actually through the cords in the trachea with end-tidal CO2 before you remove the tube. So now you either have seen it go or you have end-tidal CO2 through it. Now what you'll do is you'll actually have your partner disconnect it from the tube securing device at the patient's face. Deflate the cuff. And now be wary here, because like I said, there could be 100 cc's in there. You got to keep pulling back multiple times until you actually get a flat pilot balloon. Now, there are times where this takes too long. The patient's starting to desaturate. I will have them rip or cut off the cuff at that point. And that gets me get that tube out of there quicker. And as soon as the pilot balloon's flatter, you've either cut or ripped the actual inflation tubing, that tube needs to be railroaded up off the airway exchange catheter and replaced with a brand new ET. I will have them hold the airway exchange catheter, and I will actually place the tube itself, because I know the moves that if I get hung up on the patient's right vocal cord, how to rotate the tube to actually get it to pass, and I know exactly the force, and I know exactly how to do it safely, and yet to get that tube in expediently. I'll put it in, you know, somewhere between 21 to 23, depending if it's a man or a woman. I'll inflate, and then I will remove the airway exchange catheter and confirm with end-tidal. Now, the first question you may have is, well, shouldn't you just railroad the existing tube in if the only problem with it was that it had popped above the cords? And I should have mentioned earlier, how does this happen? How do these ET tubes that were properly placed, witnessed with the cuff passing through the cords, wind up above? And it's the patient tonguing. It generally means they were inadequately analgesed or they're a little bit delirious and they keep tonguing that ET tube. They keep pushing with their tongue. You could actually pop the ET tube up above the cords. So that's how this happens. So you might say, well, why not just put that existing tube in? Because it's still working. It's just the cuff has passed above. And sometimes I will, but what I found is when those cuffs have been inflated to like 100 cc's, I worry that they're no longer as strong as they once were. Maybe I'm just a worrywart, but I'd like a new ET tube in there. It's not to say I won't ever just deflate that cuff and railroad it back through the cords and reinflate. But if the patient's not desaturating, I'll probably change it out for a fresh tube. That's just me. I'm sure people's opinions vary. The last thing I'll talk about is why have that bronch there? What's that for? Well, if you're having crappy visualization with the VL, I think it's a much cleverer move if you have the bronch there to just ride the bronch down the ET tube, assuming it's because the cuff is above the cords. Because it's not going to help you if the cuff is below the cords and ruptured. But ride the bronch down, make sure the bronch's at the carina, drop the cuff on that ET, railroad the ET, and then take out your bronch. Or if you have time, you could do the move where you actually pull the tube back a little bit to where you think it's supposed to be, and then you could actually check it with the bronch itself by riding the bronch down to the carina, pulling it back until you're at the tip of the ET tube, and then seeing, let me really describe this. The move is you put the bronch down to the carina, you put your fingers on the bronch and leave them there, you pull the bronch back until it's at just the tip of the ET tube, and then you look at the distance between the top of the bronch port and your fingers, and that's how far the tube is from the carina, and you could actually put the ET tube there that way. Or you could do what I do, which is just ride the tube down to the carina, ride it down until you visualize the tip at the carina, and then just pull back, 3 or 4 centimeters. But the point is, the bronch will help you in that no visualization circumstance, and then you don't have to confirm the ET tube. You can, if you have that Aintree catheter, actually even exchange out a tube this way. What you'll do is you'll ride the bronch down to the carina, push the Aintree off of it, pull the bronch out. Now you have an Aintree through your crappy tube, deflate, take it out, and then put the new one in. I still like having the video laryngoscope during all of this because it allows me to displace the structures that will impede the placement of that tube over the Aintree. Okay, if you don't have any idea what I'm talking about with any part of this, put it in the comments section and I will surely clarify. But that is the way to handle the very dangerous but seemingly simple circumstance of an ET tube exchange. And don't be falsely misled. Just because the tube was easy 3 days ago when you intubated the patient in the ICU doesn't mean it's going to be easy now. So don't treat this in a blasé fashion. Don't just pull out the ET tube and reintubate them. Bad stuff could happen. We've all been witness to this if we've practiced any period of time in intensive care medicine. Scott Weingart for the MCRIT podcast saying bye-bye.